You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, October 16th, 2024. We're now 20 days away from Election Day, and it's another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or on the app or by podcast or on social media. We appreciate you starting your day right here. I've got a question for you. And this applies to you, not necessarily to 5 million other friends and neighbors around Wisconsin, but I'm going to take a guess here. If I told you the Wisconsin legislature earlier this year put itself on a taxpayer-funded paid vacation for 9 months, would you know which party is responsible for going AWOL like that? Because based on the political ads I'm seeing, Republicans are hoping that you think Democrats are in charge of the legislature and wasting your time and money when it's Republicans who've been in charge for 14 years. Very interesting line of attack that we'll talk about here on Up North News Radio. Also, we have today's climate check report. This week's climate check from Melissa Baldoff talks about the broad bipartisan public support for climate-related legislation. Again, broad bipartisan support. So why are Republican lawmakers in Madison and Washington content to do next to nothing about an issue that is going to have increasing impact at the ballot box as people consider the importance of climate legislation and an entire new generation of clean energy jobs? In our second hour, we'll talk to Elizabeth Montmoreau, Up North News reporter. She recently had a chance to visit with the sister of Vice President Kamala Harris, who had come to Wisconsin, to talk about Kamala Harris's platform when it comes to what's called the care economy or the sandwich generation, people who are taking care of young children, but they're also taking care of their aging parents. And we'll hear a little bit of what was said there by State Senator LaTanya Johnson of Milwaukee. Congresswoman Gwen Moore was there and others as well. Elizabeth will talk to us all about that. Then at 7:30, we have a guest, a Green Bay area communications professional. You know how people sometimes say they prefer to do their own research, and then they just end up repeating talking points that were not necessarily rooted in research? Well, that definitely does not describe this woman. She took it upon herself, after hearing about Project 2025 again and again and again, she took it upon herself, said, I'm going to study this thing. I'm going to read it top to bottom, and I'm going to write a blog about it as I'm doing it. And that blog has become practically a master's thesis in exploring right-wing ideology and the politics of division that you will find in that document that would cut so much of what we pay our taxes for, of what we come to expect from government. So we'll talk to our guest about that coming up a little later on this morning. Along the way, of course, you can join us at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Give us a call, drop us a text. You can use the Civic Media app as well to do that. You can also put a comment on Facebook or YouTube where you'll find us as well. It is a chilly one across Wisconsin this morning. Again, make sure the kids are properly layered for today. It's 29 here on Lake Wissota, 21 in Hayward. Wausau's at 31, La Crosse 30. Wisconsin Rapids 26, Amory 26, Madison's at 31, Waukesha's at 32, Milwaukee's at 38, and you'll find some teens around there as well in Black River Falls right now, where it's in kind of a low spot there. The current temperature is 16 degrees as we bring in the toasty warmth of the company that we keep with Greg Bach, joining us now from Waukesha. Mr. Bach, good morning.
Black River Falls individuals, what's going on up there?
Like I said, they're in the low ground there, and yes. I'm sure they'd much rather head for the hills at this point, where things might be a little touch warmer. I'm not ready for the teens yet.
No. You said 16, and I put my hands into my hoodie. Like, I got a nice heavy hoodie on today, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm getting cold just thinking about that. So things are fine here. It is chilly. It is the weather report, and also it's dark. Still dark. And
always love that weather report. Yes, it is. It's dark.
It's dark and dry. That's what I tell you. That's what I learned in meteorology school. But yeah, other than that, everything is doing peachy keen.
Hunky dory.
You said what? 20 days until the election?
20 days until the election. but also, he said, and again, I don't have any company memo on this, but Greg Bach is always conspicuous by his absence, and Greg Bach will be absent from this program Thursday and Friday. It's not his fault. It's moving day. Civic Media is playing around with some of the studios, moving tab A over into slot B, and Doohickey C is going over here. And so while everything is getting rewired, Mr. Luke Mathers will be boarding the show from Studio A2 in Madison. And that just comes with growing a big old statewide network. So Greg's got to get out of the way while all the moving boxes, go hither and yon, and then rejoins us on Monday morning. What will you do Thursday and Friday when you don't have to get up at some ungodly hour?
I'll sleep for like another hour and a half and then get up and go do Matt and Air on Air then.
Exactly. This show is punishment for you for the joy that you get working with Jane Mattiner. It all has to even out. So
you
enjoy a couple of mornings like that.
I don't like that kind of talk.
All right. More internal news here. Now we've talked a bit about Civic Media. Let's talk about this particular show, because I was looking through, the Civic Media, chat channels there, and saw that the news site Wisconsin Watch, which is an investigative news site, had done, I'm not going to call it an investigation, but had done a series on talk radio in Wisconsin and the changing landscape of it. Of course, Civic Media is a big part of that changing landscape for the better, I would hasten to add. But they decided, they being the folks at Wisconsin Watch, that they were going to drop in on six different radio hosts. And they refer to it as, looking for misinformation. I'm just going to start with the term accuracy first, and you'll see why I say that in just a bit, because misinformation is, shall we say, a bit more intentional. And now you have to go way back to February here. I'm not sure why it took this long to research and write up the article, but they took a week's worth of programs from all six of these hosts, including yours truly. So, by extension, Mr. Bach here, he gets dragged along whether he likes it or not. So this program got monitored for a week in February, along with the others. And then they looked for statements that were not true and things that, they would title as misinformation. Now, I didn't know this was coming when I first saw Wisconsin Watch, and then I saw, caught my name. What I caught at the top was a sketch of me. It's a pencil sketch of the six hosts that they dropped in on. And my friend of mine, of course, right away texts in after he saw it. He's like, I'm very concerned that Wisconsin Watch hired Stevie Wonder as a sketch artist, because that's not you. And I appreciated the sentiment. It's a reasonable likeness, shall we say, for, I'm sure it was drawn off a photograph, but it's the smirk that I've got on my face. And I'm like, what does the artist think I was thinking about? And then Sherry pointed out to me, everything. And I'm like, yeah, I do kind of smirk at everything, don't I, at one point or another.
You were thinking about lies telling on
That's
the radio.
Right. Passing on that juicy misinformation.
Did you get wrong?
I can't wait to tell you, which is why I'm kind of going with accuracy rather than misinformation. Misinformation, tell you what, let me come over to the chart here. They have a chart that accompanies this with a little talk bubble next to your name for each bit of misinformation that they uncovered during the course of the week. And topping the list was a woman at WIBA, WISN, who's been there for forever. And I mean, these are things that you would expect to have passed along from a right-wing radio station, all about, you know, alleging how many illegal ballots were cast and saying that, you know, certain people like Megan Wolf at the Wisconsin Elections Commission, you know, has more power than she ultimately has. There was untrue statements passed along about, you know, Ukraine and Donald Trump's impeachment. All in all, 39 different statements by this one host that you could either label as not accurate or misinformation. Number two on the list was another right-wing host from WISN in Milwaukee. 14 different pieces of inaccurate information. At the very bottom of the list is somebody from Wisconsin Public Radio who got zero things wrong during the course of the week. Although the article notes that also since that time, his show has been canceled. So the one guy that had the least amount of inaccuracies is no longer on the board. And then there was a woman from WNOV who was way down on the chart with just three pieces of inaccurate information, along with yours truly. Three. I had three pieces of inaccurate information, and then Steve Scafidi at WTMJ had two, so hats off to him. So I had to click on each bubble. I'm like, What are they labeling as misinformation on here? I have to see this. And so you click on each one, and the one is where I made a comment about Trump essentially saying that, you know, Putin would be okay, that Trump said Putin's okay invading the Baltic states and Poland if you surrender in Ukraine. Okay, you got me on that one. Trump didn't actually say the words he'd be okay with Russia invading Poland and the Baltics. But what did he say? He said if NATO didn't, other NATO countries didn't step up what they were doing, he'd tell Putin to do the hell whatever he wants in Europe. So is that misinformation from me? Yeah, I didn't think so either. The other one was Special Counsel Robert Hur. His report that was very critical of Joe Biden for having some classified documents, but in the end did not recommend any charges. I said the report essentially exonerates him. They said the report never says it exonerated him. And that's true. That was my interpretation of the report and the fact that no charges were ever brought against Joe Biden. I'm feeling pretty good about this. It's this last one that really gets to me. I said the average American spends $144 on Valentine's Day candy. And I said, what is, you know, who's skewing that wrong? And I obviously misread something. It's $14 on candy, $192 on everything else, like Valentine's Day jewelry. Yeah, so that's what you get for misinformation here from the otherwise pretty darn accurate Up North News Radio. Back after this. Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life. The album is on today's history lesson. And so we're going to hear several cuts from that landmark album throughout the morning here on Up North News Radio on this Wednesday morning, October 16th. All right, we're going to next go to former President Donald Trump, who, recall the night before last, had, shall we say, an interesting rally in Pennsylvania where he just up and stopped. Instead of answering questions from the audience, he said, you know, nobody wants to hear questions. Let's listen to music. And so they played music, and he just stood there and swayed and kind of gave that little dance, you know, the one he's got with the little from his hips, like he's pulling the he's pulling his belt back and forth around his waist. And he did that for 39 minutes. And my favorite post about it, and I'm not going to say this person's wrong, it says, this is what happens when 10 minutes after the first gummy, you decide to take a second one. I'm looking at it going, yeah, I don't detect any problem there. It's like he just shut down. And again, this is not Donald Trump decided to be a DJ and then played a whole bunch of dance hits. It was everything from Pavarotti and Ave Maria to, you know, hard rock to standards. It was not in any way, shape, or form intentional. And again, I promise you, if Joe Biden or anybody else had done something like that, we'd be hearing all the rest of yesterday. We would have been hearing all about strokes and how to detect them and everything else. But it's just Donald Trump being eccentric. But anyway, then yesterday he goes to Chicago and talks to the Economic Club of Chicago. And the moderator is from Bloomberg News. And he gets what I would fairly call the toughest questions of the campaign. And he absolutely stumbled, bumbled his way through every question, never quite answering it. The moderator trying to bring him back, Trump insulting the moderator and saying, oh, no, no, I don't care what all your decades of data shows. When I slap tariffs on products, it won't raise prices for Americans. It's going to save American jobs. Despite, again, no evidence of that. He again defended the mob from January 6th as patriotic Americans who were there with peace and love. I mean, just a complete Alice in Wonderland view of things. But the one clip I do want to play for you is insight into what Donald Trump really thinks of you if you are a blue-collar worker. And there are a lot of blue-collar workers in this state who are engaged in manufacturing in some way, shape, or form, or in other industries. Here's Donald Trump talking about auto workers and how at a plant in the South that has German parts that essentially auto workers don't really do much at all. Give a listen to how he describes it.
And you know what they can do? The Mercedes-Benz will start building in the United States. And they have a little bit. But you know what they really are? Assembly, like in South Carolina. But they build everything in Germany, and then they assemble it here. They get away with murder because they say, oh, yes, we're building cars. They don't build cars. They take them out of a box, and they assemble them. We could have our child do it.
Can we?
And there's the moderator again trying to put him back on track. But again, in Donald Trump's view, a child could assemble cars, and that's all that blue-collar folks do. I would hasten to add that from the Mercedes-Benz website, it says here, due to the diversity of body types, powertrain concepts, equipment options, and more, the van that's built at that plant is available in more than 1,700 variants. Every employee has to learn around 900 individual process steps in a specific order in order to build the vans. That doesn't sound like a kid with a box of puzzle pieces to me, Greg.
No. And as a Lego enthusiast, I would say that I could not put together a car, even though I put together an Aston Martin Lego set. And going back to what you said just a few moments ago, if Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or Tim Walz or anyone Democratic aligned had said something even half as insulting, it would be front page paper, 48-hour story. What's the campaign going to do? Who, you know, I mean, like, it's, he gets to just with impunity say things. Like, he insulted an entire group of workers in this country, and he's going to be held to no account.
And again, no consequences whatsoever.
Never.
But it's much easier for them to insult, and they love to insult women. Of course, he was insulting Kamala Harris repeatedly, again, intentionally mispronouncing her name. But Eric Hovde is no different. Eric Hovde was recently on a right-wing cable show. And I just wanted to play a little clip about, you know, again, when he tries to come off as all Mr. Friendly, Mr. Warmth in the ads, this is how he actually talks about women like Tammy Baldwin. And then we'll talk about his actual view on the economy. Here's the clip.
She doesn't know anything about the economy. She says it's greedflation. It's corporations being greedy. And as I like to say, if corporations, it was all because of that, then why haven't they been greedy the last 40 years? And by the way, are farmers being greedy because they're passing on the increase in their input costs? Of course not. It's just a ridiculous argument. None of these people have any kind of economic understanding. It's embarrassing. When I listen to Senator Baldwin or Kamala Harris talk about economics, I literally shake my head. Half of me wants to laugh. The other half of me wants to cry because these are the people that are controlling our government finances.
Yeah, once again, the intentional mispronunciation because, you know, she's a woman and Tammy Baldwin, you know, they know nothing with their tiny brains. It's science, you know, quoting Anchorman. And this, again, is the hubris of and the arrogance of wealthy CEOs who think government should be run like a business and tries to deflect. Like, it's not greedflation or corporations would have been greedy for 40 years. Well, one can argue that for the past 40 years, corporations have been able to get away with a lot under Reaganism that they couldn't do before. And you're blaming farmers for passing on costs?
Oh, God.
You're blaming farmers. You know, that's blaming farmers as opposed to blaming the people who have to think of their first duty as to shareholders is real rich. And so the understanding that this man has of the economy, it makes me want to cry or laugh that he's a serious candidate for U.S. Senate.
I just want to say, if you don't believe, if you think he's right, Google Kroger price gouging. Read the story. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, and that's just one example. And it's that mentality and those kinds of personal values that Hovde and Trump want to bring back to government. Today's Climate Check with Melissa Baldoff is coming up next. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. It's
electric! And just like that, we're back, 6:34 on this Wednesday morning. Time for our climate check with Melissa Baldoff. Melissa, how are you today?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing well myself with 20 days to go now. We're really getting there. And we're going to talk a bit in a moment about voters and the extent to which these climate issues matter to them. But let's start with some current news related to the climate. And I'm seeing a familiar photo in some news coverage about how the world's rivers faced the driest year in three decades back in 2023. And here in 2024, the Mississippi is running low again. It's a problem for farmers moving beans and grain. And in both stories, you get this photo from the St. Louis area where you see a whole bunch of the exposed riverbed and some barges have a narrower channel to head down there. And, you know, Melissa, this was readily predictable that, you know, a changing climate not only gives us, you know, more rain, stronger storms, but then we get these drought conditions like this.
Exactly. I mean, this is what there have been warnings about. You know, the SOS has been up about this, that climate change leads to very unpredictable and erratic weather. We're getting droughts, we're getting floods, sometimes in the same season. And it makes it, you know, both can be very dangerous, both can be very harmful to the economy, and both can be, you know, very, very difficult to manage through and recover from. And it just makes it that much more astonishing to me that, you know, the only thing that's become predictable about these weather cycles is the unpredictability, and that we know we can predict that we are going to have bad outcomes, that we are going to have, you know, negative impacts to our economy. We're going to have hardship for our farmers and producers and agricultural and rural communities. We're going to have loss for businesses. We're going to have an impact on tourism, on our recreational opportunities for people who want to get out and hunt and fish, you know, for people who want to enjoy the cold weather, recreational opportunities, all of those are going to be impacted. We know that by the changing climate. And yet we still have people who are in positions of authority and in positions to make a difference and help start mitigating some of these issues. And yet they still don't want to do anything, unfortunately.
No, they don't. There was a new year or a new report, this report about 2023 being the driest on record. It came from the weather agency for the United Nations, known as the World Meteorological Association. I'm sorry, the World Meteorological Organization, the WMO. And their Secretary General, Celeste Solo, said in releasing the report on Monday, you know, that the hydrological cycle is kind of like what you said, erratic and unpredictable, and that this isn't just a thing with rivers. I mean, lakes, reservoirs, groundwater, soil moisture, terrestrial water storage, snow cover, glaciers, evaporation. They're all covered in this report. And they're noting that, you know, the glaciers that feed rivers in many countries have suffered the largest loss of mass in the last five decades. And, you know, that's troubling enough, but what's the real world impact? Well, they write that it can threaten long-term water security for millions of people globally. And Melissa, I think it's always worth that reminder that we really do take our clean water for granted. There are literally billions of people that wish they had as much plentiful clean water as we do.
Absolutely. And, you know, that is one of the reasons that when people talk about climate havens and, you know, places that might be safe as the climate continues to change. Not only would they be safe from, you know, things like the devastating hurricanes we've seen in recent days and weeks, but places that are going to have abundant fresh water resources. That's one of the reasons that places like Wisconsin are so attractive as a climate haven, not just our weather and what the climate will look like, but our access to fresh, clean drinking water. So yeah, it's incredibly concerning that not only was last year the hottest year on record, it was also the driest year on record.
Yeah. And so let me add a little extra just solely about the Mississippi River. And this is from an AP story from last month where I can hear some folks saying, hey, wasn't the Mississippi River at like flood level in like Iowa, Illinois, some places in Wisconsin as well, you know, not that long ago? And that's true. But the article notes that the flow into the Mississippi was offset by drought conditions in the Ohio River Valley. And so that's what's led to, you know, the two don't necessarily balance out. The drought is worse. It's affecting the river level. And here's what that means to you, Mr. and Ms. American consumer. About 60% of U.S. grain exports are taken by barge down the Mississippi to New Orleans to ultimately be transferred for shipment, you know, elsewhere. It's basically, why do they do this? Well, 15 barges lashed together carry as much cargo as 1,000 trucks. And you don't want that much more traffic on our roads to make up for what the river can't handle. So there are real world impacts to all of this. You and I know that, Melissa. It turns out a lot of Americans know that. From CBS News, the article, "A majority of Americans support climate reforms. Why won't Congress deliver?" It's a question we ask here all the time, but it's nice to know that more voters are looking at their members of Congress and saying, why aren't you doing something? Why are you in complete denial?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like CBS News is listening to Climate Check every week. I sure hope they are. But yeah, this is something that is, you know, as they point out, you know, it's a deeply polarizing issue within Congress, but it's not a deeply polarizing issue among Americans anymore. This is something that people really strongly agree on, that they believe in it. They understand that it's real. They get that there's science behind this, and they want to see the people in power, the people who have the authority and the ability to do something about it. They want to see them do something about it. And, you know, even in very conservative parts of the country, you're seeing people who agree that we need to do something about climate. Maybe they don't support every single climate policy, but they're concerned about climate change and they want to see more effort and more research into renewable energy. They want to reduce carbon emissions. They want to do more to address climate change. So that really is, you know, the question here is why won't Congress do something about it? And I, you know, I think that's just a question that, you know, we'll maybe see a little bit, of an answer from some people come the election. Maybe we'll see some changes here. I certainly hope we do.
Well, if it does translate into votes, the public opinion polling in the story comes from the Yale Program on Climate Change Communications and notes that 2/3 of Americans say they are worried about climate change. 8 in 10 Americans support funding research into renewable energy. 3 out of 4 support regulating carbon emissions. And I like that they pulled out in one case, Jack County, Texas, where Donald Trump got 90% of the vote 4 years ago, and yet a full majority, 58%, support regulating carbon emissions. So the people get it. They may not necessarily, like you said, agree with how much of it is caused by man-made and industrial activity. They just know what the circumstances are like. They can look out their window. If floodwaters aren't rushing into their window, that we've certainly seen that recently, thanks to Hurricane Helene.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons, that I believe, and I think that this, you know, polling data bears that out though, is that, it is, that the issue of climate change just doesn't rate as an incredibly high issue on the priority list for most voters when they are going to the polls. You know, there's a partisan divide there. It is a higher ranking issue among more progressive voters and a lower one among conservative Republican voters. But overall, this polling from Yale indicated that global warming ranks 19th among 28 issues that they listed for people to choose when they were deciding a presidential candidate. So, you know, it's not a top issue, top of mind issue for most voters, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's the difference between preferences versus priorities. And, you know, they know what the situation is, but they're certainly looking at other issues. They talk to voters in here who, like, there are Republicans in here who are concerned about the climate, but they're more concerned about other matters. And so that's why they're going to vote for Republicans anyway. But it does note something that we have talked about before, that there are more Republicans willing to join that conservative climate caucus. They are definitely seeing the number of projects from the Inflation Reduction Act coming into their districts. I mean, even when you break down by party where Inflation Reduction Act projects are going, 60% of them are going to congressional districts with a Republican representative. 60% of the projects, 69% of the jobs, 83% of the total dollars being invested. Now, again, this is very early. All these projects are just getting started, but that certainly has to send a message, Melissa, to these members of Congress that there are economic reasons why they should stop living, you know, in full denial.
There absolutely are economic reasons. And I think that there are reasons that can address concerns, you know, across the spectrum, because as much as, you know, you have Republicans who, you know, have been opposed for, you know, their set of reasons, you know, we've also had some Democrats who, while, you know, lawmakers who, while they, you know, absolutely support, you know, the policies, but have had some concerns about, well, you know, yes, this is what we want to do, but are we leaving any communities behind? You know, is this the right priority when we know that we have to really focus on addressing some of the justice issues and the issues of opportunity for everybody? And I think that's one of the really smart ways, one of the many really smart ways that the Inflation Reduction Act came together, was not only using this as an opportunity to invest in the climate, invest in our future through, you know, this incredible investment in addressing climate change, but also in using it as an opportunity to advance economic justice through environmental justice and help lift up communities of BIPOC folks and rural communities and areas that had really felt left behind and been left behind, so that some of these lawmakers don't feel like they have to make that decision between, well, maybe I support this, but I feel like I have to be focused on, you know, the economics or, lifting up some of the members of my community. Now they can do both.
Yeah. And so will any of this make a difference next month? Probably. Researchers at the University of Colorado, according to the CBS News story, said that when you look at the amount of voters for whom climate change was a deciding factor, that probably boosted Biden's popular vote total by 3%, which was enough to give him an edge over Trump in the 2020 election. And then there's an ABC article that we can maybe talk about later on about Gen Z that found, again, real concern about the climate. 31% of Gen Z are concerned that their generation won't have enough clean water in the future. And they believe that 88% of them believe politicians are responsible for addressing water issues related to climate change. So this is an issue that, again, might not be at the top of some people's lists, but it better be on the list someplace or the voters are going to take it out on them. Melissa Baldoff, thank you always for our little climate check this week. Enjoy the rest of the week and we'll talk to you later.
Sounds good.
And coming up, we've got today's history lesson, our forecast from Brittany Merlot, and, of course, our homeroom segment coming up in the next hour of Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life hit number one this day in 1976. It debuted at number one on the Billboard Pop Albums chart, becoming only the third album to achieve that feat and the first by an American artist. Sir Duke and I Wish both went to number one from that album on the pop chart, and we'll hear those a little later on. Isn't she lovely? Melissa Kay joins us now. Nice to have you here, Melissa. How are you?
Good morning. So sweet.
I'm just a real
cream puff over there.
Oh, a cream puff. There we go. Yeah,
that he's a man who spreads physically misinformation around the radio. Pat Wrightlow.
I was stumbling because I wanted to say things right. From 97.5 WFHR and 105.5 WIRI, how are things out there in Wisconsin Rapids world?
Oh, they're good. They're busy. We're busy. We're always busy.
How did you put it as you continue preparing for your little talk show? You were smiling as you were editing?
I was. I've been interviewing the Nakusa tech ed classes, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And these kids, they're dynamite. I love what they have to say about the work that they're doing with 3D printers. It is so cool.
That's so awesome. Well, good. Yeah. We're looking forward to the premiere of that real soon, but always nice to visit with you here. So we had this very nice Stevie Wonder, Isn't She Lovely, in 1976. That was the number one album. Here was the number one single at that same time by disc jockey Rick Dees.
Oh.
You have to play it. And so there's right a there, lot of variety.
Yeah, the
a lot of variety in the 70s.
The polarity of America.
Wow. That's the alpha and omega of American pop music right there. Anyway.
Do you know this song, Melissa?
No.
You've never heard Disco Duck by Rick Dees?
I have never heard this. But I envy you. To see this played over some of the town hall footage I've seen recently. This would make a great dance way.
Disco Duck, tell us your thoughts on manufacturing in America.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I would love to see Trump dancing to this one. On this day in 1793, Queen Marie Antoinette was executed. On this day in 1916, Margaret Sanger opened the first family planning clinic in the U.S. On this day in 1978, Cardinal Carol Wojtyla was elected to the papacy and took the name Pope John Paul II. He was the first non-Italian pontiff since 1523. It was a very big deal at the time. Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, born Michael Balzeri in Australia. He is 62 years old today.
And this is one of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, like, real, you know, deep cuts, songs about California.
Uh-huh.
Deep cut.
Fred Turner from Bachman Turner Overdrive is 81 today. Bob Weir, Grateful Dead, 77. Suzanne Summers died a year ago, one day before her 77th birthday. She was born 78 years ago today. The Million Man March took place in Washington, D.C. around this on this day in 1995. Happy birthday to John Mayer, who is 47 years old today.
Back from his, like, cutie patootie days.
Yes.
I just gonna sing a song for you.
And now he's basically a member of the Grateful Dead.
He owns it now.
He owns the Grateful Dead. He basically, bought the rights to it or something. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, travels around. That's his new deal. Creedence Clearwater Revival called it quits this day in 1972. Darius Rucker was inducted into the Grand Ole Opry this day in 2012. Just the third African-American to join the club besides DeFord Bailey and Charlie Pride. On the national calendar day today, today's National Dictionary Day. Melissa, when's the last time you actually cracked open a dictionary and went through the pages?
I would say in the last 10 years.
Uh-huh.
I used to have one on my bookshelf. That was my mom's, and I don't think I have it anymore, at least not to hand.
We had a teacher who would sometimes assign as punishment if we were too loud and rowdy to quiet us down. We had to write out basically a page from the dictionary.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sure most of the students hate it. I loved it. I was such a word nerd back then. I loved learning all the words and the
derivations. That would have been so much better than the essays that I had to write when we were naughty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. This is Global Cat Day. Where's Selena and that damn cat when you need her? Anyway, this is National Bosses Day. So I guess we all send a note to Luke Mathers saying you're special and we love you.
I do that like every other
Luke's
day.
I know you do. Yes. Well, we think so on this show. We treat Luke as our boss here. This is National Bra Day, which is more about breast cancer awareness and nothing else unsavory. This is National Department Store Day.
Bra should be comfortable.
Yeah. Thank you. There's that bold stand I was looking for. Underwires. They should never poke you, damn it. There we go.
They should not exist.
No. This is National Liqueur Day, and this is Take Your Parents to Lunch Day. I don't know if that's more of a student thing in schools or if we're supposed... I can't imagine taking my mom to lunch at work. I would be... she would... Yeah, I would never recover from the embarrassment.
Hey, Mom, there's some bags of tiny chocolate chip cookies. There's tea in the fridge that belongs to somebody else, frankly, but it's fine.
Exactly. All right. Melissa, I got to squeeze one more news story in, so thanks for joining us and have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you too.
All right. Just one quick note before we go here, because I'm noticing a new line of attacks in political ads. Republicans attacking Democratic incumbent legislators as do-nothing. What's that line from Office Space, Greg? Do you have that to play for us?
What would you say you do here?
That's the line. That's the line they used in the commercials. And I will end the hour the way I began it. Does anybody not know that Republicans have run the legislature for the past 14 years? And so attacking Democrats as getting nothing done in the legislature might be the least self-aware campaign tactic in history. What would you say you do around here, Republican majority?
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.